The Tom Woods Show, episode 769.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey gang, Sarah Young, the mom of seven who became an affiliate marketer so she could stay home with her kids, has taught my own mother how to do the same thing. And she and her business partner, Andrew Hansen, are holding a special webinar for my listeners to show how it's done. November 3rd, 2016. So sign up and grab your spot at tomwoods.com/Andrew. Folks, if you're like me, you get more email than you can cope with, and you frankly don't know what to do about it. Well, do what I do. Use SaneBox to declutter and get your life back. Check it out at SaneBox, SaneBox.com/Woods. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here, talking about the environment today with Mark Morano, who is Communications Director at CFACT, the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. He's also producer of the documentary Climate Hustle, released just this year, 2016, and publisher of Climate Depot, which you can visit at climatedepot.com. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Happy to be here. Thank you very much.
You just got back from Brussels, premiering your documentary film there, Climate Hustle. Tell us about how that went.
Well, that was the film came out to theaters in the U.S. back in May. We had over 400 theaters in U.S. and Canada. We had a Paris premiere last year, and we actually had a congressional at the House Science Committee back in April. And now we just had, on October 19th, our EU, European Parliament, debut. And it went very well. We had some hostile questions in the crowd, but the movie was generally well received. It was attended by many members of Parliament, which was a good thing to see. And we got some copies out to them and had some very frank conversations about what's going on in Europe vis-a-vis. They're a few years ahead of us, maybe even a decade ahead of us, in terms of the left's climate agenda, you know, being implemented. And we're seeing firsthand in talking to the members of Parliament there about the skyrocketing electricity prices, about the impacts on seniors, about the renewable standards mandates, about the decimation of their carbon-based fuels. And a lot of countries now are reverting the other way. And Germany's fighting back and England's fighting back. But it really is a window into where the United States is headed.
I do want to talk about some climate change related issues at the beginning, even though they're not directly climate change related. I do want to talk about things like so-called renewable energy, because we keep hearing claims, and I have a sister podcast called Contra Krugman, where we refute Paul Krugman every week.
Yes.
And man, we're doing a lot of climate change stuff because that's all the guy talks about lately. And one of his constant claims is that it's just a right-wing talking point that wind and solar are inefficient. They're getting more efficient and their costs are coming way down. So the right wing isn't going to be able to use that talking point for a whole lot more time. What do you say to that?
Well, this has been going on for years. In fact, you can go back to the late 1970s during the energy crisis with Jimmy Carter and his sweater. And it was always, and they put solar panels in the White House. The idea was solar is just about to have the breakthrough. It's going to replace everything. It's going to be spectacular. All you naysayers are going to be proven wrong. The reality is solar energy, in my opinion, has a greater breakthrough potential, first of all, than wind power, for example. And solar may end up coming through someday. However, it's not there yet. And we know it's not there yet because after tens of billions of dollars in subsidies by our own government, by governments around the world, solar isn't just stepping up, so to speak. Now, it could be people say, oh, it's increased this capacity. It's growing in leaps and bounds. Yeah, if you have a penny and you double the penny, triple the penny, quadruple the penny, it might seem impressive, but you're still dealing in pennies. And we're dealing with pennies when it comes to the actual energy supply of the world. Solar and wind are tiny fractions. I believe the latest estimates are less than 3% global. When you look at those two combined, solar being, in other words, solar until the day people can go to your local Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, buy a solar panel, get off the grid in many important respects. Yeah, that's going to be the day that you don't need people to talk about. We don't need any, still need subsidies and, oh, the evil carbon dioxide. When that day happens, that's going to be the day we're looking for. But even before that, we're looking for massive breakthroughs in solar. If it happens, it's going to happen. You don't need to cripple the competition. And here's the problem I have with the Krugmans of the world. they claim solar and all these renewable energy are making these great leaps through. And their implication is somehow that carbon-based fuels and we're set in our ways and we're not open to it. If it's cheaper and more efficient and produces more energy, then it's going to catch on. And all the studies I've seen, and they just keep coming out, there's a recent one that shows that per subsidy, if you want to call, you know, carbon-based energy getting subsidies through tax breaks and stuff, carbon-based energy, oil, gas, coal, produce leaps and bounds more energy than any possible subsidies in return you get on so-called renewables. So to answer Paul Krugman, yes, solar is a potential. And I don't want to be against any technology. A lot of people say, oh, well, I'm not against solar and wind. I'm against mandating energy that's proven to work and overinvesting and subsidizing and mandating energy that hasn't proven to work. In other words, we're banning energy that works, coal, oil, and gas, and now we're mandating energy that hasn't proven itself. That's the problem right now.
What exactly is the Clean Power Plan, if implemented, supposed to do? And how could you oppose something called the Clean Power Plan?
Yeah, what this is, and it's that sort of that name that tricks you into thinking, oh, well, who could be opposed to clean power?
No child left behind. What do you want to leave children behind?
Yes, and here's the deal. In 2003, 2005, 2007, 2008, 2009, up to 2010, they had tried to ram climate bills through the United States Congress and Senate. And I mean, they being the climate global warming lobby, if you will. And they failed spectacularly every single time. The most success they had was 2009. The House actually passed the bill and it went on to the Senate. But after it passed the bill, the congressmen, including Democrats like Colin Peterson in Minnesota, Republicans like Mike Castle in Delaware, went home to their districts. And this was the birth of the Tea Party. It was Obamacare and then the climate bill were the two driving factors. But these congressmen were ridiculed. Democrat congressmen in their home districts ridiculed, laughed, jeered at the town hall meetings back in their state for saying why they voted for the climate bill. The audience laughed and jeered. After it was over, Democrats said, I will never vote for that kind of a bill again. They took such a beating in their home district. So what happened? Harry Reid never even submitted the bill for ratification in the Senate, not for ratification, but for a vote in the Senate. Now, why am I bringing up all this old cap and trade stuff? You asked me about the EPA's Clean Power Plan. Ha ha. There's a reason behind my method. It's very simple. The EPA decreed that carbon dioxide was a pollutant. Based on their own, you know, predetermined finding, they needed to do that to make an end run around Congress. By doing that, by saying that what we inhale oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide from our mouth, humans do, by saying that what we exhale from our mouth is now declared a pollutant by the United States government, President Obama could then do an executive order bypassing Congress. And the executive order was the Clean Power Plan, which was derived from it. And now they essentially have a climate bill without a single vote of Congress. But it's even worse than that. Not only without a vote of Congress, but even worse than that was the public was completely unaware that this had happened. In other words, the Capitol Hill switchboards lit up like crazy when the previous cap and trade bills came up for a vote. And they were overwhelmingly against it. But the politicians were forced to vote for it because of the Obama administration at the time when it passed the House in 2009. Well, it never was submitted for a vote in the Senate. So what happened was, President Obama did the executive order which led to the Clean Power Plan, which did carbon dioxide as a pollutant. In other words, we inhale oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide as humans. That's now declared a pollutant. Our breath is declared a pollutant by the United States government. So what they've done is they've gone in now and they're going after coal. They're pretty much significantly shutting down coal. They're going after fracking next. And it's through these, if you will, policy wonk, arcane regulations, boiler max standards, power plants, all kinds of regulations that are technical jargon that they're using to shut down energy that they deem politically incorrect, for lack of a better phrase. And so what Obama's plan is doing is it's choking off the life to carbon-based energy, oil, gas, coal, and it's now mandating more and more so-called renewables, wind and solar, when wind and solar aren't capable yet of stepping up. And this is the gist of what's happened. President Obama, it's a cunning and actually, you know, I call it brilliant tactical maneuver, because after years, a decade of failed efforts to pass a climate bill, they do an executive order, public's not aware of it, no vote of Congress, and the president has essentially a domestic climate legislation without a single vote of Congress and without the public being aware of it. It is brilliant.
All right, you know, I actually want to, before I forget, I want to ask you something that's driving me crazy, and I figure you're one of the people to ask. I just lived through Hurricane Matthew.
Yes.
I live in Central Florida, and that didn't really hit us. We had almost no impact from it. but I know that in South Carolina there was a lot of damage, and or at least at the very least, I know people who were without power for several days. And every time you get a hurricane these days, you know perfectly well, as well as I do, what happens. You get a lecture about climate change, and it's responsible for the hurricanes. What is the deal with that?
This is one of the, I mean, it's like a joke. It's a scientific joke that they're attempting to do. We have gone through now 11 years without a Category 3 or larger hurricane making landfall in the U.S. That is the longest period, 11 years, since records began the U.S. Civil War. Nothing's even come close to it. Beyond that, though, since 1970, global hurricanes are showing either no trend or declining trends. In other words, you can't point to hurricanes as an example of, oh, they're getting worse because of global warming. If anything, they're getting either no trend or better. And that trend that we have with no landfalling hurricane is phenomenal. That's number one. So now, anytime there's a hurricane, given all of our statistics, in other words, the earliest formation, time of year, calculated wind speed, you know, at this location, at this longitude, latitude, they can come up with, and they try to find any unique statistic of the recent hurricanes. And now any hurricane, whether it's a Category 1, even a tropical storm, is now unprecedented in some way. They use some measure to make it unprecedented. And what they've done, and we actually have one of the climate activists named Brad Johnson, who every time there's a tornado or a flood or a drought, they call it fossil fuel poisoned weather. And the gist of it is that every bad they announce ahead of time, global warming will cause bad weather. And then guess what? Every time there's a bad weather event, they go and they announce, and their friends in the media amplify, hey, what? We were right. We predicted this. And I've heard this so many times working in the U.S. Senate. I worked in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. How many times a politician stood up? Barbara Boxer, one day there was tornadoes in Oklahoma. My God, unprecedented, right? No, actually, tornadoes are down dramatically since the 1950s, the big tornadoes. Hurricanes, we've already talked about. Floods, if you look at the actual data and studies in hydrological journals, on 100-plus year timescales, there's either no trend or declining trends. Droughts, global droughts have actually declined. California, drought, as bad as it has been, is nowhere near where it's been in previous centuries. In other words, the 20th century has been, in the 21st century, have been actually one of the better centuries for droughts when you look at the historic record going back about 300-400 years in California. So there is no way you can say extreme weather is getting worse. In fact, my film, Climate Hustle, actually gets into that, interviews the scientists. We're at a historic lows in many regards across the board for bad weather. But because we have so many new ways to measure, because we have satellite, because we have Doppler radar, because we have weather observers in every planet of the Earth, we can now say, oh, this is unprecedented. We've never measured this. They come up with all kinds of silly statistics. And now the ultimate, Tom, is climate activists. This was in the Washington Post, or actually a former Washington Post reporter named Andrew Freeman's writing about this. They want new ways to measure hurricanes. Why? They want a whole new measurement because they get frustrated because the hurricanes aren't Category 3 or bigger, but they want to say, oh, this is unprecedented damage. And they'll use financial numbers, which makes no sense because unless you adjust for inflation and all the development, you can always show even a modest flood today is going to blow away anything in economic damage from the past because of everything so much more expensive and built up today, especially along the coast. So they want a whole new way to measure scientifically these hurricanes. And it's a way to now, it's essentially a way for them to declare every new storm unprecedented, dramatic, a new normal. And then I hate to tie this in, but this is all part of it. Al Gore met with attorney generals at a press conference in New York City. I was actually at the press conference as it ended. This is back in April, end of March. And their new goal is to tie weather events to global warming and then have states' attorney generals sue energy companies to say, you made those tornadoes worse. You made that hurricane that hit us worse. You made those floods worse. Fossil fuel poison weather. And it's going to be turned into a shakedown of fossil fuel companies.
Wow. Saying, I did not see that coming, but man, I should have.
Let's think of the cigarettes. Now, cigarettes might be more legitimate if tobacco executives knew. I haven't studied the history of the tobacco industry, but it's that same model. They're trying to tie carbon dioxide, a trace essential gas, into nicotine and tobacco and a cancer-causing agent. That's what they're trying to do metaphorically. So with the cigarette settlements, they went in all the healthcare costs and they were able to get huge settlements out of the tobacco industry. Well, they're looking at it, and this is where the RICO statutes come in. They want to go after racketeering for energy company CEOs and even skeptical scientists. They're going to come after Energy CEOs, big energy companies, ExxonMobil. That's what the whole thing about Exxon knew. They're trying to, again, they're trying to parallel it to the cigarette industry. Exxon knew the hazards of the byproduct of carbon. They knew the hazards of their product, which was the carbon dioxide, and they hid it from the public, kind of way that, like the way the tobacco. And then they're trying to say, you owe the public money, and there's going to be massive shakedowns by these attorney generals. They've already colluding with Al Gore. They couldn't get cap and trade through. They couldn't get the carbon markets to take off. This is their new financial scam, and they are poised to go. And once again, skeptics, if I can criticize us, my own side, we are left flat-footed again. We are out-organized, out-financed, and out-establishment, if you will. The establishment is all on this. So this is this. There's no reason they shouldn't be successful given their track record.
All right, I got some more juicy stuff for you. Let's pause first to thank our sponsor. Folks, at the end of the year, your email inbox gets crazier than ever. You got all this political stuff. You got all these promotional emails for Christmas gifts. You want to just get rid of it all and never hear from them again. Well, that's one thing SaneBox can do for you with its Sane Black Hole folder. Or you got a lot of busy friends now at the end of the year. Are you sure they're getting back to you when you write to them? And then you got a balance in your head. All right, I wrote to this one. Did I write to that one? Did they get back to me? Well, there's a special folder with SaneBox called Sane No Replies. And it reminds you of emails that have not been replied to. There are all kinds of tools SaneBox makes available to you. And in general, it helps sort out your important email from your not-so-important email and saves you time. I use it myself and swear by it. Check it out at SaneBox.com. That's SaneBox.com/woods and get a 2-week free trial. And if you continue on, you get an automatic 25 smackers discount for being a Tom Woods Show listener. SaneBox.com/Woods. Now, Mark, I actually don't know your age, and I'm not asking you to disclose your age here on the show, but I'll tell you, I'm 44, and when I was growing up in the 80s, the perception of environmentalists was quite different from what it is now. The public perception, thanks to the climate change issue, is that the environmentalists are the sober scientific ones, and people who question their claims are anti-scientific, and they hate science, and they're superstitious and stupid and ignorant. But in the 80s, it was clearly the environmentalists who obviously were anti-scientific, because one after another of their environmental scares was exposed as being basically nothing at all, like the acid rain thing or the ALR on the apples or whatever it was, or whatever environmental initiative was the order of the day. You would look at it and, yeah, it might have made human beings better off in one area, so that there'd be some area where one out of 500 million people will die a year because of this one thing. But to alleviate that would cost so many resources that no doubt that would lead to 10 deaths somewhere else that we wouldn't have noticed otherwise. So there was just a defiantly anti-scientific posture they took, and now it's the opposite. Have you ever noticed that, that somehow they managed to switch that on us?
Yes, if you go back, and even the modern environmental movement really started, you know, in the mid 1960s. You could say it's Rachel Carson's The Silent Spring, which I believe was like 1961. But beyond that, Paul Ehrlich really popularized the whole idea of the overpopulation bomb. He popularized this to the point where he was going on Johnny Carson. One of Johnny Carson's, in fact, you can watch the old Johnny Carson reruns now, and Paul Ehrlich pops up occasionally. Johnny Carson's eating it up, lapping all up all the doom and gloom and ridiculous predictions of the future, and how we're all going to, you know, resource scarcity and famines and devastation from all the human overpopulation that's coming. Well, what happened was in the 1970s, particularly, the first Earth Day was, you could argue in many respects, the motives behind it were very, very legitimate. We had filthy rivers and pollution across cities, and it was a dramatic change. And many of these original environmentalists started with Clean Our River. There were local groups. There were people just, what we would say today are conservationists, because what's happened is environmentalism and environmentalists became very political, and they became motivated. And this is, I think you've had Patrick Moore on your show, so he would explain it the best. But in a gist, the gist of it is he was motivated by conservation, and when he joined Greenpeace and saving the earth and even fighting against nuclear war. Well, by 1986, he realized this was an anti-science organization that was out and was no longer presenting science, but was essentially creating alarm and fear. And that's what happened with the environmental movement. And one of the things you can say, whether you're talking about Save the Amazon, which I did a documentary back in the year 2000, if you remember, the 80s and 90s weren't about global warming. It was all about the Amazon rainforest and how many football fields a minute. You had Hollywood getting involved, films like Fern Gully for children. You had Sting's rainforest concert, which included many celebrities every year, every single year in New York City up until about the year 2000 when global warming took over. So the one common theme that the overpopulation scare, that the deforestation scare, that the climate scare all share was no matter the environmental problem, the solutions were always the same. More government power, more command and control, so-called global governance that the United Nations has touted. Al Gore has touted as part of the climate bills and the climate cap and trade agenda, this global governance. They're all for more central planning, and they use whatever environmental scare of the day is to get people motivated. And that's why Paul Ehrlich rode the overpopulation scare and influenced a lot of people until he was shown to be a total, basically laughingstock on those predictions. I've talked to biologists and others. They really respect the work of Paul Ehrlich outside of the area of overpopulation. So he was a competent scientist. But he's someone who loved the extremes, loved the limelight, and loved exaggeration and just making up bold predictions of doom. He became, I can't remember the word for it, but someone who just who revels in doom and gloom. It's an amazing thing. And these are competent scientists who allow themselves to just wallow in nonsense in order to get attention.
I do want to ask you about CFACT and your documentary, but one more thing. With your group, CFACT, which is the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes. And my website is climatedepot.com. It's like Home Depot, except Climate Depot. That's the daily news. And the website for the film is climatehustle.com, H-U-S-T-L-E.
All right. So I'm going to link to all those things at tomwoods.com/769. But I would just want to clarify that this CFACT group does more than just climate change related things. It's intended to be an answer to the environmental movement across a wide spectrum of issues. So give me an example of something that has nothing whatsoever to do with climate change, but that you guys have written about.
Well, actually, CFACT's been around since 1985. And it's essentially a free market, if you will, environmental group. We believe you can have development coinciding with a healthy environment. And that's one of the things left out of traditional environmental movements is the development part, is the human factor, because all they want to do is ban and stop progress in that regard and make the environment all consuming. We've gone to villages in Cancun. We've given out done different various food projects there. We have a humanitarian mission in Africa with Uganda and other places. We've done multiple things like that. We do eco summits around the world, and we try to do essentially a free market approach to environmentalism to contrast with all the first of all the twisting of science to doom and gloom, and also to the stuff that the solutions harm the people. And we're dealing with 1.2 billion people who are without running water and electricity in the world, and they're talking about limiting their carbon dioxide emissions. And I even talked to, when I was at the EU Parliament, one of the dissenting people, one of the global warming activists in the audience who was really upset with the film. We were talking about Africa and development, and they just seem to think that people can't develop the way we can. In other words, it's a white, wealthy Western world telling Africans they can't have what we have because the earth can't handle it and we're facing a climate catastrophe. And that's the shocking part. What's even more shocking, by the way, Tom, is the United Nations is admitting that this isn't about the environment. They've actually said they want to redistribute wealth by climate policy, that climate agenda is not even related to the climate policy isn't related to climate. It's actually a social engineering. The EU climate commissioner, who I talked to many people about when I was in Brussels Parliament, has said that even if they're wrong on global warming, they're doing the right thing by policy. And this goes back to, it doesn't matter whether we're facing a catastrophe or not. What matters is that they centrally plan our economy using the environmental scare. That's what's shocking. They've actually admitted that. And this is what we're facing here, is an agenda. And it goes back, again, it's a scare agenda. They're using global warming to create central planning. And groups that I'm involved with, like CFACT, are trying to expose that. And we're trying to show that there's another way. In other words, even if you faced a climate catastrophe, you wouldn't want to go with United Nations central planning approach. That would limit human achievement, endeavor, technology, which is what you would want to unleash if you were actually facing some kind of catastrophe. Thank God we're not actually facing it, because if we had to rely on the United Nations and the EPA to save us, we would be doomed.
All right, now take a few minutes to tell us about your documentary, which I haven't seen yet and I didn't realize was out, but I will watch it and then we could maybe talk about it. Tell us what the gist of climate hustle is. And let me just ask you what anybody would ask you. Are you saying there is no global warming? And regardless of what your answer to that question is, what is the point you're trying to drive at in the movie?
Okay, yeah. Yeah. The question is, is there global warming? Yes, we've had global warming since 1850, when pretty much official thermometer records began. And what happened in 1850? Oh, that was the end of the Little Ice Age. So yes, we've warmed since then. Have we warmed since the 1930s? That's questionable. The 1930s, according to the EPA, all the high temperature records for cities across the U.S. were set. We may have actually cooled since the 1930s. Have we warmed since the 1970s global ice age? Yes, we have warmed since the 1970s. Have we warmed since the medieval warm period? Well, we've either flatlined or possibly cooled since the medieval warm period of 900 to 1300 AD. Have we warmed since the Roman warming period? Well, we probably cooled since the Roman warming period. So when someone says, is there global warming, you got to know by timescales. And also, we have not. Since 1998, we're statistically significant, no significant global warming. Now, this year, they've done, it's an amazing thing, Tom. They actually gone through this, the land-based temperatures, they've adjusted so much. They've gone back and cooled the 1930s to actually show a warming trend, number one. And they've gone and the satellite data was not altered, and it showed no, you know, so showed the global warming pause. And then last year, they actually went in, or earlier this year, they went in and adjusted those now. They back adjusted. It's like a company losing money. You hire an accountant and they go back and fix your books to show you're making money instead of losing money. That's what they're doing with the temperature record. But that's another point. To answer your question about the film, it essentially says there are hundreds of factors influencing climate. Carbon dioxide is but one of the hundreds of factors. The idea that picking one of the hundreds of factors and selecting at the margin the human contribution to CO2, and then saying we can fiddle with the temperature and come up with a 2-degree limit, we can alter the path in storms and frequency and come up with legislation to address that while having a huge human impact on development. We actually have the opening scientists in the film say it's scientific nonsense. So to answer your question, yes, there's a human input on global warming, but as one scientist says, it's the human impact is so insignificant that you can't distinguish it from natural climate variability. We have not been able to distinguish the human from, in other words, nothing unprecedented is going on right now, whether you're talking temperature, storms, even ice. In fact, if you look at the geologic history of the Earth is in one of the 10% coldest periods of our history. In other words, 90% of the Earth's geologic history, it has been warmer than now. You could not support ice at both poles during 90% of the Earth's history. And CO2 has actually had historic low levels, record low, a CO2 famine in the geologic record. So we have geologists, we have physicists, climatologists, we have former United Nations scientists who've turned against the UN. You'll see lead authors of the UN basically ridiculing the United Nations claims now. And we also focus most significantly, I think, on politically left-leaning scientists, scientists who voted for Gore, scientists who endorsed President Obama, scientists who are French socialists, who then looked at the evidence and reversed themselves and announced why they reversed themselves. And it's fascinating stuff to watch. Plus, we have a whole bunch of humor about all the ridiculous tipping points on the whole section I call climate astrology that goes into how every weather event is caused by global warming and how global warming is even affecting the dead. And you'll see all that in the film.
So climatehustle.com is the film site. So people should go there. We got your site, climatedepot.com, and then cfact.org. It's a lot of stuff. So where should people go first? I don't want to get you in trouble with the CFact people.
Keep it simple. You go to climatedepot.com and you can order the film. You'll see, follow the links there. We have a big ad up.
All right, there. Yeah, you can't miss it. Can't miss it. All right. Well, you know, and then of course you could always go to tomwoods.com/769 if you're driving around. You can't remember any of these website names. 769 is the episode number and you can get all the stuff linked there. All right, Mark, thanks for your time today. I appreciate a lively guest, by the way. If only more guests could be the way you are, you know, my life would be a heck of a lot easier. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right, I've got a very interesting site. This one is created by a listener who also happens to be a good friend. He's the communications director of the 10th Amendment Center. It's our friend Michael Meharry, who's actually been a guest here on the show. And he's got a brand new website, and it's called godarchy.org. Now, I've known Mike Meharry for a while. I didn't know him back in his old days before he moved to the 10th Amendment and sort of became more libertarian. But he describes himself as a refugee from the religious right. And he says here at godarchy.org that he really came to accept the non-aggression principle. And he said, I founded Godarchy to further explore the intersection of Christianity and the state from an anarcho-capitalist slash voluntarist slash libertarian point of view. Well, apparently I'm not staying in contact enough with Mike because I didn't know he had moved in this direction, so that's very interesting to hear. And he says, I don't claim to have all the answers. My goal here is simply to add to the discussion and present an alternative to state-centered thinking and solutions that dominate Christianity today. So check out godarchy.org. I will link to it as the listener website mentioned at tomwoods.com/769. And remember, you can get a shout-out like this and all my goodies if you start your website through my link. So check out my link before you do anything at tomwoods.com/publicity. All right, that's it. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.